The first step into the storm to rain had been falling since morning, steady and cold, soaking through fleeces and percolating into shoes. The megacity looked muted under the Argentine sky, its glass halls dulled, its neon signs blurred by wastes of water. Maya kept her head down as she crossed the road, the marquee pulsing in her grip against the wind. She was late for her shift at the bookstore again, though she misdoubted anyone would notice. The shop sat put away between a laundromat and an empty cafe, the kind of place people only stumbled into by accident or by love of dust and paper. Outside, the air was warm and smelled noiselessly of old runners. She shook the rain from her fleece and ducked behind the counter. It was then until she was half through mounding a pile of returned novels that she realized someone was watching her from the poetry section. He stood altitudinous, his posture royal, his dark hair damp at the edges like he'd just stepped in from the same storm she had. His clothes were neat but not precious, his expression both curious and conservative, like he was deciding whether to speak. Maya glanced down, fastening on aligning the book backbones, but her palpitation quickened. She felt it before she could name it, that quiet mindfulness of being noticed. He approached sluggishly, carrying a slim volume of Neruda in one hand. "Do you work, then?" She looked up. "I do." "Looking for commodity specific?" His aspect darted to the book in his hand. "A gift for someone important." She smiled noiselessly. "Neruda's a good choice, if you're trying to be flashback." For a moment, commodity passed between them, an implied understanding. He asked her to wrap the book, and as she did, she caught the faint scent of cedar on his fleece. When she handed it back, his fritters brushed hers compactly. "Thank you," he said, his voice low. "I'm Armin. Maya." And just like that, the day didn't feel relatively as Argentine. Over the coming many weeks, he kept coming back. Occasionally he bought books, occasionally he didn't. Occasionally he stayed only in many twinkles. Other times he dallied, thumbing through runners as if the shop were a retreat from the noise outdoors. Maya learned small effect about him in fractions, that he worked in armature, that he preferred tea to coffee, that he collected old charts. But there were effects he didn't say too, like why he always checked his phone snappily before leaving, or why his aspect occasionally sounded to be measuring an unnoticeable distance between them. One autumn, he brought her a coffee despite knowing she preferred tea. "They didn't have what you like," he said apologetically. She belted it anyway, just to keep the moment. "Do you ever feel," he asked suddenly, "like you're in the wrong life? Like the bone. Your living isn't really yours, but someone differently's idea of it?" She dithered. "Every day." They looked at each other for a long moment, the hum of the ceiling a dick the only sound. Also a client came in, and the spell broke. It was then until the first warm day of spring that she saw him outside of the shop. She was sitting on a bench in the domain, reading, when he appeared beside her, without warning. "I allowed. I'd no way find you without a counter between us," he said, smiling. She closed her book, trying not to feel too pleased. "Perhaps I just wanted to see if you'd try." They walked together through the domain, the air heavy with the scent of blooming magnolias. They talked about books and music, about Nonage dreams and the ways they'd both let them go. But when they stopped at a crosswalk, she noticed him regard around nervously ahead, pulling his phone from his fund. A single communication flashed on the screen before he locked it snappily, but not before she caught the name Layla. "Someone staying for you?" she asked smoothly, his jaw tensed just for a moment. "You could say that." He didn't explain, and she didn't ask, though the question lodged itself deep in her mind. The verity came a week laterally. They were sitting in the corner of a quiet cafe, the light outside fading to dusk. "There's commodity I should tell you," he began, his hands wrapped tightly around his coffee mug. "Layla is my fiancé." Maya's breath caught. "Fiancé." He jounced. "Our family's arranged it. It's been decided for times." She goggled at him, the clink of chopstick from another table, sounding distant. "Also why? Because I didn't anticipate you," he said, his voice rough. "I didn't anticipate to walk into that bookstore and feel like I'd met someone I'd been looking for without knowing it." She looked down, her casket tightening. "Armandus, I know," he intruded. "I know what it means. But I also know I see Anne just walk down from you. Her mind was distraction, wrathfulness, craving, unbelief. She wanted to tell him to leave. She wanted to tell him to stay. She wanted to not want him at all. But when he reached across the table, his fritters chancing hers, she didn't pull down. And that was the first step into the storm. The walls between us the days after his concession were sharp-edged. Every time Maya saw Armin, her mind replayed the words my fiancé like a warning. Yet she kept seeing him anyway. It was like standing too close to fire, knowing it could burn her but unfit to step back. They stopped meeting at the bookstore and started choosing places further from the megacity center, where no bone, from his circle, might see them. A dim, lit jazz bar two thoroughfares over from the old road station. A seaside bench after evening. The corner of an art gallery on a Tuesday autumn. Each time, she told herself it would be the last. Each time, she set up herself saying yes when he called. One evening, they sat on the roof of an old parking structure, legs swinging over the ledge, the megacity glowing beneath them. "Tell me commodity," Maya said, her voice low. "However, the prospects, the marriage, what would you do?" Armin lifted his head. "If you could walk down from it all, the job. I'd find a small place by the ocean. Design houses for people who wanted them to last longer than they did. And I'd..." He stopped, smiling noiselessly. "I'd spend my gloamings hearkening to you read." Her casket tensed. "That's a nice dream." "It's not a dream," he said vocally. "It's a chart. Just one I'm not allowed to follow." She looked down. Hysterical, he'd see too important in her eyes. "Also, why tell me?" "Because perhaps one day I will." The first time someone saw them together, it was nearly by accident. They were leaving a bookstore in a neighboring quarter when an aged man in a dark suit glanced at them. Armin set mid-step, his hand slipping from hers. "Who was that?" she asked after the man passed. "My uncle," Armin murmured. His jaw was tight. His eyes surveying the road as though peril might be hiding in plain sight. "He'll tell my father." She wanted to ask what would be also, but his silence told her enough. That night, his calls came less frequently. When they did, there was a pressure in his voice she had not heard before. Weeks passed. They rented a room above a bakery, spent their mornings walking along the reinforcement, their afterlife drinking tea in the sun. It felt like the life they'd formerly imagined on that rooftop. Fragile, but theirs. Occasionally, she caught him gaping out at the water, his expression undecipherable. "Do you lament it?" she asked one evening. He shook his head sluggishly. "No, but I wonder how long we can keep this." The answer came sooner than either of them wanted. A letter arrived at the bakery, addressed in his father's handwriting. Inside was a single line, "You can come back now, but she cannot." He read it doubly ahead, folding it down. For the rest of the day, he slightly spoke. That night, he lay awake beside her, the pressure in his body telling her everything she demanded to know. "They'll no way stop, will they?" she rumored. "No," he said, "and I do not know if I can keep running ever." The silence between them was heavier than any argument could have been. A week latterly, he told her he was going back. "It's not because I do not love you," he said, his voice shaking. "It's because if I do not, they'll destroy everything. Not just for me, for my mama, my family. Indeed, the people who work for my father, they'll all pay for it." Her casket felt concave. "And what about me?" "You'll be free," he said. "Free from this fight. Free to live without them breathing down your neck." She wanted to tell him she didn't want freedom, if it meant losing him. But she could see in his eyes that the decision was formally made. They didn't say farewell at the station. He just held her tightly, his face buried in her hair, before stepping onto the train. She stood there long after it pulled down, the sound of it fading into the night. Months passed. She returned to the megacity ultimately, though she avoided the places they had been together. She heard, through whispers, that the marriage had happened. She didn't want to know the details. Occasionally, she passed a bookstore window and saw a man standing in the poetry section, and for a split second, she'd suppose it was him. But it no way was. One stormy autumn, she set up a package on her doorstep with no return address. Inside was a slim volume of Neruda, the same bone he'd bought the first day they met. A single note was put away inside Maya. Some loves are ain't meant to win. But that doesn't mean they were ain't worth everything. Hey! She pressed the book to her casket, the rain blurring her vision. And in that moment, she understood the verity neither of them could change they had loved against society. But society had ain't fraudulent. Still, for the rest of her life, she'd carry the memory of the days when it felt like it might.